Good morning. This is the 8 o'clock hour for Friday, October 18th. It's my mom's birthday. I'm David Summerstein. Lots of rain and wind yesterday, but not much damage. Legal marijuana, not just in New York, but also Connecticut, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. The governors are working together.
How you do this is all the difference. And as I said, it can be a positive if done right. It can be a negative if it's not done correctly.
Congresswoman Elise Stefanik says U.S. military bases are lagging behind in dealing with threats from cyber attacks.
I fear we have not yet identified the scale and scope of our problems, let alone begun to mitigate our most concerning shortfalls.
Outdoor conditions in the Adirondacks this weekend and a preview of a documentary about the Rohingya genocide in Burma. It's all coming up on the 8 o'clock hour. Stay with us. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour on North Country Public Radio. I'm David Summerstein. Thanks very much for tuning in. Chance of rain today and cloudy skies with highs in the 50s. Not much different than it is right now. Maybe a little bit warmer. Partly cloudy this evening. Lows in the 20s tonight. Lows in the 40s along the Vermont border, and sunny both Saturday and Sunday. This is news from North Country Public Radio. Yesterday's rain and wind was a nor'easter, and it left hundreds of thousands of people without power in the Northeast. There were also school closings in New Hampshire and Connecticut due to downed trees and power lines and electricity being out. In the North Country, the heavy rain and high winds brought power outages to parts of the eastern Adirondacks and the Champlain Valley. Roads were closed because of downed trees. Route 73 near Keene, one of the busiest highways connecting Adirondack communities to the interstate, was closed due to a downed power line. The Aussable River surged during the storm to just below flood level. There were no reports of injury or serious property damage. North Country Representative Elise Stefanik says military installations and bases around the world are vulnerable to two new threats, climate change and cyber attack. At a hearing this week in Washington, the Republican criticized military leaders for not moving fast enough to prepare bases. Brian Mann reports.
In her opening remarks, Stefanik, one of the few Republicans in Congress who talks often about climate change as a real threat, said the military needs to get ready.
First, we remain vulnerable to extreme weather events and climate change. We have seen these events adversely impact public safety, our economic security, and our national security. We must therefore factor in these environmental changes when discussing resiliency of military installations.
But much of Stefanik's time during the hearing Wednesday was spent focused on a different threat, cyber attack. She says in 2017, Congress directed the Defense Department to assess digital threats to military bases and begin hardening defenses.
Unfortunately, this review and the subsequent corrective actions remain far from complete, and we are still incredibly vulnerable to attack. I fear we have not yet identified the scale and scope of our problems, let alone begun to mitigate our most concerning shortfalls.
One of the witnesses at the hearing was Robert McMahon, the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Sustainment. He acknowledged to Stefanik that the military hasn't yet followed through.
Congresswoman Stefanik, I would agree with you that we have not fully sized that.
The FY17 NDAA was a couple years ago.
It was.
What has happened in between?
I think what I would tell you is there's been a tremendous amount of discussion about what we need to do and understanding, characterizing what the threat is, what it looks like, the amount of execution, and to your measure and my measure is what is actually in place, not the level that I would expect to have at this point in time.
Another witness, Lucian Niemeyer, the acting assistant secretary for the Navy in charge of installations in the environment, said his branch of the military has made more progress hardening digital defense.
We've completed hundreds of assessments and started on real-world mitigation efforts to start a short term to isolate the problem and work on long-term solutions. I will tell you, ma'am, I've been spending a lot of time on this issue. We really need a national policy and a national answer on how we address control system security.
Stefanik says the military has been slow to even understand how digital threats could impact bases in times of conflict.
I think this highlights, again, my concern with not even understanding the scale and scope, let alone what our mitigation efforts are going to be.
In her work on the Armed Services Committee, Stefanik has often focused on next-generation threats and technologies, things like AI and cyber warfare. Brian Mann, North Country Public Radio.
New York City lawmakers have approved a plan to close the notorious Rikers Island jail complex and replace it with four smaller jails. The city council voted yesterday to build the new jails and close Rikers by 2026. City Council Speaker Corey Johnson called Rikers Island, quote, a symbol of brutality and inhumanity. Mayor Bill de Blasio and other Democrats support the plan. The governors of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania met in New York City yesterday to try to hash out a multi-state approach to legalizing the adult recreational use of marijuana. Karen DeWitt reports.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the governors are trying to adopt a unified approach to legalization to avoid their residents crossing borders and going to other states where the laws might be more expansive or the taxes might be lower.
There's a desire to do this. I believe the people of this state and our surrounding states have a desire to do it. But the old expression, the devil is in the details. How you do this is all the difference. And as I said, it can be a positive if done right. It can be a negative if it's not done correctly.
New York legislators proposed bills in 2019 to legalize recreational cannabis, but could not provide enough yes votes to pass the measure before the session concluded in June. After the meeting, the governor said in a statement that they came up with some core principles, including researching the experiences of other states that have legalized cannabis and adopting the best practices. They will also advocate for the passage of the Secure and Fair Enforcement or Safe Banking Act that would override federal rules that have forced cannabis companies to conduct all of their business in cash. Any agreements ultimately made by the governors would still need the approval of the state's legislatures, and legislative leaders of several states attended, including New York Senate leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie. The summit also addressed the practice of vaping and the epidemic of a vaping-related lung ailment that has sickened over 1,000 people nationwide and killed several. The illness has so far been linked to black market marijuana products, but health officials have not reached any conclusions. The states also agreed to take more steps to discourage minors from vaping any types of products, including nicotine. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy says the steep rise in teen vaping is a public health threat.
We've got an exploding vaping reality among youth, which has become an enormous challenge, health and beyond. And that's something I think we all share.
The New York State Health Department has issued a ban on flavored nicotine e-cigarettes, saying they lead to increased use by teens. But that ban is on hold, pending a court challenge from the vaping industry. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Town boards around Messina are showing support for a plan to sell Messina Memorial Hospital to the not-for-profit that also runs Canton Potsdam Hospital. According to the Watertown Daily Times, the towns of Brazier and Louisville have passed resolutions supporting the transfer to St. Lawrence Health System. The hospital is publicly owned by the town of Messina, but it's been losing millions of dollars every year. A referendum will be on the ballot for Messina town residents to approve or disapprove in November. The State Department of Health has said it will contribute $20 million to save the hospital if the deal goes through. The state approved the plan back in June. St. Lawrence Health System is already managing day-to-day operations of the Messina Hospital under the leadership of CEO David Bender. Across the North Country, there are many facilities where the public can bring recycling and dispose of bulk items and trash. You drive your car or truck to the dumping area, and you often see a backhoe sorting through the items. For today's Herd Up North, we pay a visit to the Casella transfer station in Potsdam.
My name's Tim Baldwin. I run a loader and an excavator, and I load trash and recyclables and separate them and put them in a trailer.
So how long
have
you been doing this?
3 years.
And what did you do before?
I drove a truck in New Jersey. I grew up here, but I moved away 20 years, worked down there, and then I came back.
What maybe would surprise people to know, do you think?
How much metals and how much recyclables we pull out of the trash. It's almost 60%.
It's actually kind of sad.
Yeah, how much they waste stuff, how much stuff is wasted that people could recycle, you know? like right. kid toys, all that other stuff. You don't see that anywhere else, you know, around the world, just here, a lot of wasted stuff.
Yeah. How's that make you feel?
Yeah, I'm sad. We separate it with that machine over there. Yep. We pull all metals, all aluminums, you know, any tires, anything that's in there, we separate.
Okay, so then that gets recycled.
Yeah, that goes to different places, yeah.
What's the hardest part about operating a backhoe here?
Just looking out for people. You know, some people just go and they just go whenever.
Backhoe operator Tim Baldwin in Potsdam. Doyle Dean produced this herd up north. I'm David Summerstein, North Country Public Radio.
This is John Warren from the Adirondack Almanac with your look at outdoor recreation conditions around the Adirondacks for this weekend. The leaves are still near peak at the periphery of the Adirondack Park, including the Lake George and Lake Champlain valleys. Elsewhere, they are mostly past peak, and leaves are falling. After the last of the rain ends today, it's looking like a good weekend weather-wise. Some light snow fell this week at the highest elevations, where temperatures are not expected to rise above the lower 40s this weekend, although daytime highs elsewhere are expected to be in the 50s, with nighttime lows mostly in the 30s. The recent increase in hikers visiting the high peaks and the nice weather will ensure that popular trailhead areas with limited parking, such as those along Route 73, will remain busy this weekend. Get there early or plan alternative hikes. Expect to encounter blowdown this weekend following the rain and high winds, especially in the eastern Adirondacks and along Lake George and Lake Champlain. Trails will be muddy, wear proper footwear, and stay in the middle of the trail. Water levels are running high, and there has been some flooding. Low water crossings may not be accessible today or tomorrow. Rivers and streams around the Adirondacks, including those in the High Peaks, Johns Brook, the Boquette, Wasable, Saranac, and Hudson Rivers are all running well above normal, which is somewhat unusual for this time of year. Most hazard buoys have been removed from around Adirondack waterways. All DEC campgrounds, except Fish Creek, have closed for the season. And Sunday will be the last day for the Ticonderoga Ferry for the season. The Westport boat launch is closed temporarily for dredging, but is expected to reopen by Thanksgiving. And Lake George boat launches at Mossy Point and Rogers Rock are now open from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Expect water temperatures mostly in the lower 50s and 40s, with the warmest waters in the mid to upper 50s. Wear a PFD, waters at these temperatures are cold enough to present a danger from hypothermia. Those are the local outdoor conditions in the Adirondacks for this weekend. For North Country Public Radio, this is John Warren from the Adirondack Almanac. Online at AdirondackAlmanac.com.
I am David Summerstein with Monica Sandreski, who is behind the board for the first time on the 8 o'clock hour this morning.
The very first time. So far, so good, I think.
You are sounding amazing.
Oh, thank you.
And you are like
it's feeling good.
You are a part of the future of North. You're the present and the future. You just got here about a month ago. This is a good moment to sort of introduce you a little bit to listeners. And you're in the news department. We've been hearing your stories already. But, you know, when people give to our fall fundraiser at ncpr.org, you're one of the folks who are going to say, hey, we're going to bring you great North Country voices.
Exactly. Exactly. Very true. Very true. And maybe you've never given to the station before. At a time when our fact-based reporting is under threat, this is your chance to stand up for journalism that you use and value. So make a gift to NCPR today in support of the real news here in the newsroom at North Country Public Radio. Donate now at ncpr.org/give or call 877-388-6277.
Thank you so much. Let's move on to a documentary that's showing across the region, sharing a title with the award-winning play of the same name, I Am Rohingya, A Genocide in Four Acts. It's a documentary that chronicles the journey of 14 refugee youth who take to the stage to depict their families' harrowing experiences during the ongoing Burmese genocide of Rohingya Muslims. The film will be shown at three venues in the North Country next week, Pendragon Theater in Saranac Lake on Sunday at 7 in the evening, at Roxy Theater in Potsdam Monday at 7:15, and at SUNY Plattsburgh's Yoakum Hall next Tuesday night at 7:15. Toronto filmmaker and director Yusuf Zine will introduce the film and answer audience questions at all three showings. He says, I Am Rohingya, A Genocide in Four Acts, is a hybrid of footage from play rehearsals, performances, and interviews. He spoke with Todd Bell.
The play is a four-act play, taking the audience through life in Burma before the violence. So you get to see a little bit of the Rohingya culture and the music and the language. And then in Act Two, we see what's been taken away from the Rohingya people and how all of that has been taken away. And so each act sort of takes you through a stage of a Rohingya refugee's journey. And we were very adamant about having genocide in the title of the film because, I mean, even till now, it's a very contested term. People don't want to classify it as a genocide because then that means people have to get involved, which, you know, in a lot of countries don't want to do. So it's sort of referred to as an ethnic cleansing, but, you know, we make a very clear point to say that this is a genocide. Right now, the majority of the Rohingya population lives in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, which is the neighboring country of Burma, Burma being the indigenous homeland of the Rohingya population. So they've all been forcibly displaced into very desolate and poor living conditions in these refugee camps.
Is this in many ways kind of autobiographical and biographical? Are these young people playing themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. They're reenacting very real memories from their childhood, from their youth, even from their time in Canada. For those who don't know, Kitchener-Waterloo is a city where a lot of refugees who landed in Canada end up resettling, and it's the largest population of Rohingyas in Canada. But what's interesting is that they're also playing their family members. They're playing their parents, their mothers and fathers, their uncles and aunts. Because we start at a time when they weren't born, in the beginning of the show, they're playing their relatives, their grandparents, their parents. And then towards the end, because all of the kids involved in the play and in the film were born in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, which is where the refugee camps are. So they were all born in refugee camps. So their memories start there, apart from a couple of the elder kids who remember actually going to Burma. And so the play is sort of balanced between their family's experiences and their own experiences. The situation right now is the UNHCR and Bangladesh and Burma are discussing repatriation of the Rohingya people in that, you know, trying to resettle them back to Burma because you have hundreds of thousands of Rohingyas living in Cox's Bazar in very tight quarters. They are trying to resettle them back to their country. But the problem is the Rohingya people are not involved in those conversations. They don't want to go back. They're saying that they don't want to return the way it is now. I mean, the Rohingya people had their citizenship stripped from them, you know, over 30 years ago. And when you have your citizenship stripped, you no longer fall under the rule of law or fall under the protection of rights in that country. In terms of going back to their homes, I mean, they have no more homes. Their homes have been razed to the ground. Their villages and everything have been completely destroyed. You can see satellite maps of their homes just completely gone. So, you know, they would be sending them back to a concentration camp at this point. I think what's important is, you know, for us as international community to keep tabs on what's happening and to make sure that there is not another forced repatriation of the Rohingya people without their consent, without their permission, without them at the table. But it's an ever-changing situation, and I encourage people to just, you know, follow it as closely as they can.
Toronto filmmaker Yusuf Zine directed I Am Rohingya, A Genocide in Four Acts. The film will be shown at the Pendragon Theater in Saranac Lake Sunday at 7, the Roxy Theater in Potsdam on Monday at 7:15, and SUNY Plattsburgh's Yoakum Hall next Tuesday night at 7:15.